Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. For Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department. They're always looking for more technicians. Because they have the business. And when you have a great reputation, you are going to get more business. Simple as that. And they already, here's your opportunity. This is something you always wanted to do. You're looking for a job. You're looking to get into a better spot, whatever it happens to be. You know what? And you want to work with other pros that can make you better. Working at Sunbury Motors in the service department will do that. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Olu Fashanu, by the way, named the Big Ten's offensive lineman of the year. Well, there's any doubt about that. And five Penn Staters ended up getting recognized on the offensive side of the ball after a series were honored yesterday on the defensive side and in special teams. Olu ends up being a first-team All-Big Ten selection by both the coaches and the media. He also wins the Offensive Lineman of the Year award. Other All-Big Ten picks. Second-team selections were Catron Allen and Hunter Norzad. Allen was picked by the conference coaches. Norzad was picked by both the Big Ten coaches and the media. Meanwhile, let's see, honorable mention picks. Let's see, Tyler Warren was a third-team selection. And and Singleton ended up being a third-team selection as well. And he was by both the coaches and the media. So Allen's second team, Norzad is second team, Singleton is third team, Warren's third team, and Olu is first team. Honorable mention picks on offense. Caden Wallace, J.B. Nelson, Sal Wormley, Theo Johnson, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Drew Aller. And the media, that was by the coaches. The media honorable mentions were Caden Wallace, Drew Aller, J.B. Nelson, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Venga Ioane, Sal Wormley, Theo Johnson, and Tyler Warren. So that's how it played out today. So there you go. And anyways, Greg there today?
Yes, I am here today, Steve.
How are you, sir? Great to have you with us.
Great day. Yep, I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, so far so good. I mean, just point me toward the board. We're good.
That's right.
I mean... Yeah. Other than that, yeah, nice and comfy and cozy here.
Yep.
Cold day. It's kind of like the suit's heart. It's just kidding. Just kidding. It is. I don't really think too much. Think twice about selections. I vote for it, and I'm careful about how I vote for it. How it turns out, it turns out. The only one that really has bugged me in this whole process was yesterday with Curtis Jacobs. Not at minimum making honorable mention by the media. Coaches, yes, but not by the media. And that made no sense to me. Other than that, I haven't really thought too much about it.
Yeah, it surprised me. I thought he played well enough to be even possibly considered for third team.
Right. No, yep. That's what I mean. You know, yep. Get recognized and, yep. You know, and then go from there? Sure.
Yep.
But that's you know, that's really it. Other than that, I don't give it too much. I mean, I'm careful about how I vote because I think it's important to all the people involved that you are careful with how you vote because they're the ones trying to get recognition, so you're trying to get proper recognition wherever you can. But then when it, the way it turns out, I don't get worked up too much about how it gets how it turns out.
Right. You know, one of the things, Steve, that it didn't surprise me with the way the year played out, but the concern at the beginning of the year for special teams on Penn State and all of those guys that were special teamers were recognized.
That's because that, that area of the team, Greg, in the beginning, if you're wondering, I'll take you back to the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Riley Thompson's a different kind of punter.
Right.
So you had to get used to how he punts. And, I'll give you an example of, we always talk about hang time in punting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you sit there and you're like, okay, you're like, what's the hang time? Because, you know, these are a little bit lower, they tumble. But you have to figure in when they punt, their ability, when they take it, that 2-3 steps, they take it running to their right. That's actually part of hang time.
Oh, exactly.
Because
yeah.
while they're doing it,
yep.
the bullets, gunners, whatever you want to term them, are going downfield.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually, I mean, that it's a different way of looking at it. And then as the season went, now I know why, because I kept looking at his numbers at FAU, at Florida Atlantic. I'm like, okay, well, his numbers there are really good, 45 and a half, number of 50-yard punts, the whole deal, you know, punts inside the 20. Well, as the season went, I can now see where those numbers came up.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, because that's the way he punted. Falcons, yeah. I would remember, everybody said, why wasn't Hardy back there at the beginning of the season? Because remember, he didn't play the first
that's
two
right,
games.
That's right, he didn't. Yep.
Period. And he has made some mistakes back there by letting the ball hit the ground, which cost Penn State some yards. Part of the key to being a really good punt returner, and tell me if I'm wrong, Greg, there's two keys right out of the gate. A, you have to be able to catch the ball, and B, you have to have judgment.
That's right. Yep.
All right. Now, then after that, whatever you get out of that is a real bonus.
Yep, that's gravy.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Hardy gives you the bonus.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
There's no getting around it. And Hardy was second team, and then anytime Singleton really had a chance at a kickoff return, and you don't get as many these days.
Exactly.
Penn State was getting big plays in the kickoff return game. Not mm-hmm. touchdowns, but big plays.
Right.
I mean, he averaged over 25 yards a kickoff return
mm-hmm.
this year. And he had,
which is
he
excellent.
Had, yeah, and he had, what, three or four that were over 40 yards?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which,
yep.
you know, so he gets recognized. Now let's get to Falcons. Falcons was interesting. Because he's in there, and he's in the preseason, and he's working against Ryan Barker and Sandra Sahadic, two left-footed kickers.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 2 weeks of the preseason, I thought, you know what, Falcons looks like he's the guy that's got the advantage here. Looks like he's in, okay, he's in good shape. All right. And then he slumped. The next 2 weeks, the 2 weeks leading into the season, he hit a little bit of a slump. Like, okay, and Sahadic was still making kicks. Okay. So that's why Sander kicked as the opening place kicker in the West Virginia game, because the last 2 weeks, the way they played out, as close as the competition was, you couldn't afford a point where you had a slump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just, you know, I'm not talking about like he goes out and 10 kicks and he misses eight. No, but he'd
right.
go out and he'd take 10 kicks, I don't know, miss three or four, whatever.
Right.
All right? That constitutes a slump for a kicker. And then, of course, Sander missed his first couple, and they brought Falcons in. And then after that, he was back on track, and he kicked the rest of the season like he did the first 2 weeks of training camp.
Yeah.
And, I mean, reliable. He runs out there to kick a 49-yarder against Michigan State. And you know, and you just knew it was going to get there. All right, now Greg, you're in for a treat.
Okay.
Matt Cotrillo's on the line.
Okay.
Filled with vinegar. Vinegar. I'm telling you.
Uh-oh, what's he going to rant about today?
Who knows?
I almost feel bad now because the great Greg Wetzel is on with us today.
Oh, now watch it.
Yeah. Jeez.
How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, first of all, I have to start with this, Steve. Again, I know I'm going down the pregame rabbit hole, but this is as bad as it gets. I'm sure you have seen something about this. Was Desmond Howard going against Pete Thamel about not being in the crowd during game day while they were at Michigan for Michigan-Ohio State? I guess he normally does his pregame reports in the crowd there. And he said, you know, what's Pete in the stadium for? Put your big boy pants on and do it in the crowd like you've been. Kind of talking about the whole situation with Jim Harbaugh. And then Reese Davis had to intervene and say he's got, from the lunatic fringe, some threats, and I quote. First of all, for Desmond Howard to say something like that, it's a completely childish move. I know it's Michigan, Ohio State. Everybody's in the rivalry. Pete Thamel's an Ohio State grad. Obviously, Desmond played in Michigan. But it's time to take your Michigan hat off and act like a professional or get out. What he did was a total disgrace, and he should be fired for that. That's right. He should be fired from that. He should have been better prepared about this. I feel like everybody from behind the scenes should have been better prepared about Pete Thamel maybe having these threats. That's why he's going to change up and do this report from before. It felt like he really didn't know that, but if he did know that and he still said that, then he almost certainly should be fired because he then really purposefully threw his fellow colleague under the bus, all because it's Michigan, Ohio State, and because Jim Harbaugh's not there, because we all know Michigan cheated with the sign stealing thing, when you can't take off your stinking Michigan hat and act like a professional. He's lost all credibility to me, period. That was childish, and that was a complete disgrace.
Well, first of all, Pete Thamel shouldn't be in the crowd, ever. And the reason he should not be in the crowd is he's the journalist. Okay. Hey, the journalist should not be in the crowd whooping it up with people, ever. So, in other words, if Bruce Feldman, I would not want him out in the crowd. I would not want Pat Forty in the crowd, right?
If you're the
journalist who's breaking news about, hey, I have information, Maryland's playing Rutgers today, X player can't go today for Maryland, my information, you need to be separated from the zoo. I mean, you have to be. And that's the only response. Well, I'd be in a meeting going, Desmond, no, he's not. Okay, you aren't Pete Thamel, and Pete Thamel's not you. I notice you're not out in the crowd. I mean, when are you out in the crowd? When's Desmond out in the crowd? Right, he's
exactly
up on the stage.
He's at the desk, on the fenced-in desk.
Right, I mean, protected. Pete shouldn't be at the crowd anyway. He should be in a separate area as the journalist who's giving the information. In other words, you can't. All these people, let's take Adam Schefter. I wouldn't put Schefter in the crowd, right? I wouldn't put Woj in the crowd. They're the information guys. Come on. Let's use some common sense here. It's a show, but when you decide to go down the route of now we're going to get to the hard news of the day, I don't want my hard news guy being surrounded by people. I want my hard news guy to sit there and be able to deliver his report and do it in the kind of atmosphere or whatever that is conducive to a, quote, hard news information report.
There you go. Totally agree. That whole thing was a complete disaster. And then the next thing in college football was, once again, I know we talked about this before, Steve, on the show, it's just the way these reviews are done. Once again, they are way too long, but this weekend in particular, and a couple of the marquee games of the week, were on plainly obvious calls, and it took them too long to either have the play stand or play confirmed, or they just didn't get the play right at all, even if they spend a whole lot of time with that. That happened in the Iron Bowl game. I think you had one of them, a couple of them happened in the Washington State game. I mean, these are all marquee games, and they were the best of the weekend. It was one of the better weekends in college football, but yet we still can't get these reviews right. They're too long, especially on too obvious of a call. They have to find a way to get this done and we're talking about ways of speeding up the game. You mentioned making halftime shorter, which I have always agreed with, but this is another thing to try and speed up the game a little bit. It's enough with these long paused reviews. Just make the call and stick with it if you don't know, if it takes you that long, and stop looking at obvious calls. I mean, a lot of it's easier said than done, but I mean, it just really slows down the game, especially when it's a good game, like you've seen really across all of college football last weekend. Right.
Or you get it wrong, like the A.J. Brown catch in overtime that was a fumble. I mean, sorry, he caught it and he fumbled it. You're sitting there like, I'm like in real time, like he caught it and fumbled it. I watched the replay, said, well, he caught it and fumbled it. Game's over. Nope. Got it wrong. Well done.
Yeah, I thought he fumbled too. Absolutely. Yeah.
Anybody with common sense knows he fumbled. It's like you sit there, look at him and go, I have no dog in the hunt. Do you think I cared who won the game? No. But I'm watching it saying, I don't get this. I don't get it at all. And, you know, and what's always been my biggest beef about officiating? The replay guys. It's always been, okay, the replay guys, in my opinion, fouled up the Iowa-Minnesota game. Because the guys in the field in the Iowa-Minnesota game, you know the punt return by DeJean was called a touchdown on the field. They got overturned on replay. Crazy. And they do take too long. Like, let's go. Move. I mean, Greg Wetzel's having a party here, and he wants people to get out of his house. Let's go.
Yeah, darn right. So we can get back on the golf course.
That's right. I don't want to eat too much food.
Yeah. I mean, excuse me, you're drinking all my beverages.
Exactly. One thing I do like about the NFL on the replay is they do have that one where they, you know, not even the officials call up. They just say right away, hey, that was an incomplete pass.
Right. The expedited replay, yes.
I do that, like that.
Yeah, that's good. No,
and
they've done a good job with that.
I wish they'd use it more often, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they've done a good job with that.
Yeah.
They really have. It's just, you know, but it's always been my problem. It's the replay guys. Yep. Like, there are times where Jack, Ham, and I have been sitting in the booth, and we'll look at the replay and go, yeah, okay. And then it's either inconclusive, stands is called, it's also like, or you're like, what? What are we looking at here? I don't know. You can't
exactly.
Be done. You can't be done.
Oh, no. I have one more. Going
geez,
to the NFL.
Greg, welcome to my world, Greg. He's not done.
I'm never done. Even he knows that. Well, and I think a lot of Steeler fans would agree on this. So, obviously, everybody saw what happened with Deontay Johnson when he didn't go for the fumble early in the game against the Bengals. He's just kind of lollygagging, claims he didn't see the ball, but it happened right in front of him, so I call BS on that. Even though, yes, he apologized yesterday for not giving the effort, this guy's been doing it for his entire career. Thinks he's entitled to all these different things as the number one receiver when he's the most overrated number one receiver in the league, probably the most overrated number one receiver that at least that I've seen in quite some time with the Steelers. This guy doesn't catch the ball consistently, didn't even get a touchdown last year, and he was still considered the number one receiver. Now, I guess that's not all his fault, but still, and he's enticed. He thinks he can do that because he's ticked off about what's going on with the Steelers offense, which I understand. You either give the effort or you get out. This guy's nowhere even close to entitlement of getting anything of what a number one receiver should be. He should have never gotten paid either by the Steelers last year. This guy is not as good as people think he is. He's not as good as he thinks he is. And what he did, obviously, on the field was a total disgrace and what was a key moment in the game. Obviously, the Steelers came back and won the thing, but, I mean, that's as bad as it gets from an effort standpoint for a guy who's supposedly this big number one receiver for the Steelers. He stinks.
To be honest with you, he should be cut. I would cut him.
Yeah.
I would cut him in a heartbeat. And I would now, would I cut him now or would I wait until it's advantageous for me to do it based on how the cap works? Maybe I'd wait. So at least it's advantageous for me to do it, but he would not be a Pittsburgh Steeler next year. if I'm running the team. I look at him and go, sorry. But his first explanation is, I was blocking. Watch the tape, dude. You stood there. You blocked nobody. So you just, that was a bald-faced lie. So you've
if
taken,
that was considered blocking, I'm going to join the NFL.
Well, to be honest with you, I've seen you play. It's pretty close.
Why do you think I only played after sixth grade? That was 2 years I was an offensive lineman.
You were an offensive lineman?
I was. Yes, I was back in the day.
Greg.
Was that Pee Wee League?
Greg.
I can't believe he was an offensive lineman.
Greg.
I think you can prove it.
I can't believe it.
Greg, that explains the 0-8 record.
That's right. Exactly.
I mean, who is your offensive coordinator? Brian Ferentz?
You know what? That may have been. I'll have to go back and look.
That's the best
Thanks,
one today.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, talk to you guys next week.
Okay, Matt.
All right, John Sauber, Center Daily Times, next.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. So important, those warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Makes a big difference, that guarantee, in your buying experience. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Joined now by the outstanding John Sauber, Center Daily Times. John, it's always a pleasure. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. I always appreciate it.
John, so let's start with this. We'll start with football, then we'll work our way over to basketball because you've been intently covering both. Penn State closes out the regular season with a 42-0 win over Michigan State. What did you see not only in that game but the last couple of weeks for Penn State on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, I saw a much more comfortable offense, right? And it's something a lot of us asked about post-game to the players, you know, what kind of changed over those last 2 weeks, essentially since Mike Yurcich was fired. And a lot of guys pointed to the simplification of the offense. And you can kind of tell that guys just felt more comfortable. They knew where they were at. It seemed like there were fewer miscommunications on offense, which is crucial. There weren't as many of those comeback routes that like Aller threw where he threw it maybe 2 yards closer to the sideline and the wide receiver didn't break far enough or what have you. And we importantly saw guys like Amari Evans get involved. And that's something James Franklin mentioned last week, as mentioned a couple times over the last 2 weeks, that they're focusing more on what guys can do rather than what they can't do. And Amari Evans can take the top off of defense, right? And he can stretch the field and open things up in the intermediate. And I think we saw a lot of that, especially against Michigan State. Defensively, frankly, I think we saw what we saw all year, right? It's one of the best three defenses in the country. Take the Spartans to task and just kind of impose their will, something that I don't think Penn State fans should take for granted, because I do think the defense will be good next year, but this might go down as one of the program's all-time great defenses.
And I think it shows in what we're seeing with some of the votes that have come up for all Big Ten and so forth. John, what made that defense, in your opinion, such a top, maybe even championship-level unit?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is – I wrote about this, that it's a shame that this defense isn't going to get to play in the playoff, because it absolutely is a championship-level defense. But you see a lot of defenses in the modern NFL are about two things, really. It's about the pass rush, and it's about coverage in the secondary. And it's usually about either finding pressure with your front seven and then relying on the back end to play man-to-man, or it's, you know, dropping seven into coverage and relying on your pass rush to get home because your front four is so good. Penn State has the luxury of having both of those things, right? They have a back four that can play man-to-man with pretty much any receiver group in the country. They have a front four that can rush against pretty much any offensive line in the country. And that frees everyone up to allow, you know, for more variety for Manny Diaz. He can blitz whenever he wants to without it being predictable, because he knows if he needs to, he can get pressure with the front four. He can drop into drop with seven for the same reason. You know, and the blitzing is allowed because guys like Kalen King and Johnny Dixon and Daquan Hardy and even KJ Winston and Jalen Reed at safety, those guys can be trusted in man coverage. So it's really the two tenets of, to me, modern defense: rushing the passer and you know, being able to cover with your back four. They were as good as it gets in that regard.
What about when you watch how Penn State plays it? You know, and we saw, for example, the Auburn-Alabama thing. They rushed 2-3. I think they rushed 2 at the end. There's no way on the planet Manny Diaz would do that. I mean, I don't think he knows how to get his foot off the pedal.
Yeah, honestly, I was watching that game because, as you know, I think we all finally got to enjoy a full Saturday of football, which I don't take for granted because Penn State played on Friday. Right. I genuinely could not believe that they only rushed 2. Even if you rush 3, like, it gives you a reasonable chance at pressure. Rushing 2 is essentially guaranteeing that you won't get there, and you're giving Milroe all the time that he wants, right? And I'm with you. I think Manny Diaz either would have brought the house, or he would have just rushed his front 4 and trusted his back 7, right? I think when you rush 2 like that, you're kind of either saying that you don't trust the guys in coverage to hold up, or you don't trust the front 4 to get home if you're going to break 4. So I don't think that would ever be an issue with Diaz in this defense.
No. So offensively, you talked about the seeming comfort level. I thought you phrased it well with the way you said that they accentuated what people could do along the way. What did you see, especially in the running game, the last couple of games, in their ability to make things happen, not only up front, but with the two running backs?
Yeah, I think they were less predictable in that regard, right? Like, it felt less forced. And I think, honestly, part of that is they were throwing the ball so well that teams couldn't kind of stack the box against the run. It allowed Catron Allen and Nick Singleton to get to spots, you know, where they were only running against six-man boxes, if you will, and the six, five or six. And so they were able to break off some big runs, you know, and that kind of it all starts with the passing game and modern college football, I think, as we all know. But that doesn't mean the running game isn't a massive part of it, because that's what opens up the running game, right, is being able to throw the ball. When you become one-dimensional, you can't do you really can't do either thing, because you know the opponent knows you're not going to do one, and that allows them to limit the other. So I think they did a really good job of essentially, you know, taking the top off the defense, like I said, with Amari Evans, getting some of those routes to the middle of the field where the linebackers kind of had to hesitate to see if something was a zone read, to see if it was an RPO, to see if it was play action. And so linebackers had to hesitate. They couldn't commit to the run right away, and that allowed, you know, guys like Catron Allen and Nick Singleton to hit those holes and create those big plays that maybe hadn't been there earlier this season.
What are your thoughts on the development of Drew Aller as the season went?
Yeah, this is a million-dollar question, right? And I've gotten some flack for people because I've not been willing to kind of cast blame on Drew Aller for how a lot of this year went. And frankly, I still don't. I'll rewatch all of the games once the season ends, because I am who I am, and I'll do a review of especially Aller and how he did. But, you know, on first glance, having watched the games live and then a rewatch every week, he did not seem to me to be the problem, right? James Franklin has said this a few times too, that there are absolutely things he needs to get better at, which is true. There are situations where he gets, you know, he can get happy feet and he gets, but he looks uncomfortable maybe when he doesn't have to. But I think all in all, he has been really good to close the season. To start the season, he had his moments, he had those flashes, but he continually got more comfortable. And once the change was made at offensive coordinator, I thought he really shined from a comfort standpoint. It's a shame we didn't get to see him the rest of that Rutgers game, because I think there was a chance that he would have thrown the ball a good bit more to close that game, and we would have seen a lot of what we saw against Michigan State a week earlier, right? But I thought by that Michigan State game, he was so good. That 60-yard throw, 60 yards in the air to Amari Evans was absolutely gorgeous. And, like, one of those throws that, like, has the press box oohing and aahing, right? Because you don't see that from most quarterbacks, and to put it on the money like that, I think overall it is a very good year that has been punctuated with the regular season, at least, with an exclamation mark of like, this is what I think Penn State fans envisioned. This is what James Franklin envisioned when they brought Aller to Penn State. That last game is like, it can now be a building block for what the rest of his career is like at Penn State.
What was your opinion of the usage of Bo Prabula, especially in the Michigan State game?
Yeah, I've always been a big believer in don't take your best players off the field, right? And to me, that's Aller. I liked when they ran earlier in the year, I liked when they ran, I think it was against Maryland, they had both guys involved in the play. I think the more you can do that, the better. It looks like they were going to do it again. I can't remember if there was either a timeout or a penalty that ended up stopping that against Michigan State, but
It was a timeout because Bo came on the field, and I was kidding Bo as we were going out to the bus. I said, "You walked in the field, they called timeout." He says, "Yeah, I was so mad about that."
But yeah, those kind of plays where you're getting him and Aller involved in the action makes it more difficult for the defense, because there are times when you have Drew Aller just standing out at receiver where it's like, okay, you're kind of playing 10 on 11 because the corner or the safety or linebacker, whoever's on him out there, can focus on the inside of the play, right? They don't have to pay as much attention to him. But I do like a lot of those wrinkles that they had where both guys got involved. That play in particular had a chance to be something like that. I really liked when in the red zone when they took Aller off the field and put Prabula on, because then you're maximizing Bo and you're playing 11 on 11 at that point, right? And Aller is, he's not swayed by the fact that he's coming off the field. It doesn't seem like he knows that Bo is a better runner and a better athlete, I would assume, because it is pretty obvious. But I think it is something they need to continue to incorporate as long as both guys are there. I would try to get both guys involved as much as I can when both are on the field, understanding at times, you know what I mean, there will be reps where Drew just stands out at receiver. The more involvement with Bo, the better, especially when you consider his athleticism. He lined up in the slot on one play. Like, he can play multiple places, and it doesn't have to be just him lining up at quarterback.
Yeah, if Bo's in the red zone, you have to account for him. And that's, in other words, you have to either spy him, account for him, or something. That's what happens when you do have a quarterback that moves in the red zone. Any idea on direction or potential direction on an offensive coordinator?
Yeah, this is tough, right? Like, it's one of those things, where James is always trying to batten down the hatches and not let anyone get any info on these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the reports about Andy Katonicki from Kansas. I know that there is some interest there on both ends. I've talked to people on the Kansas side of things too that wonder if he would leave. I know he made $1.1 million this year. That's nothing to scoff at, especially at a place like Kansas. And he's very loyal to Lance Leopold, so I'll be curious to see if that ends up coming to fruition. But that is the type of candidate that I would expect James to kind of go after, right? The kind of guy who has maximized multiple types of quarterbacks, the kind of guy who wants to spread defenses out, it's not afraid to run the ball at the same time, and really is just, in a good position, I think, anyways. I know some people have been concerned about Katonicki because of the Jalen Daniels is a really good runner, and people think he can't maximize a pocket passer, but I don't think that would be the case. I would fully expect him to be able to adapt and maximize what he has, if that is the guy. And if it's not him, I would expect, whoever it is to look a lot like that offensively, right? It's trying to spread it out, trying to run the ball, especially someone that's adaptable, that can run that kind of offense, that kind of spread offense in multiple ways.
The conference championship games coming up will have an influence as to how the bowl picture shakes out. On this particular day, where do you think it shakes out?
Feels like this ends with the Peach Bowl, right? Like, it seems like the most logical destination. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Cotton Bowl, but like you said, if things don't go Penn State's way this weekend, if Iowa steals a bid, or if Oklahoma State does, it could get a little messy on whether Penn State makes a New Year's Six. But I tend to think those things will go in Penn State's favor. They'll make a New Year's Six. It'll probably be the Cotton Bowl or the Peach Bowl. Peach Bowl, I would guess, against a Group of Five school, because I can't imagine that, especially if it's Tulane, if you know, the committee wants to send Tulane right back to the Cotton Bowl for a second year in a row. So I do think Penn State ends up getting in a New Year's Six Bowl. A little less certain on the landing spot, but you know, I think those two are probably the most likely if that's the case.
I think they would like this. I think the Fiesta Bowl is in line to get, like, they haven't had a group of five in a while.
Yep.
That's why there's a lot of things enter into this. So I'm not sure yet myself on the opponent. I will ask you a basketball question. It's kind of tough for you guys to get around and cover road games, so you weren't physically in Orlando, but you watched. At this point, seven games in, what are you seeing with basketball right now with Bucknell coming up?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Those first four games couldn't have looked less like the last three, right? Like, it was
right.
It was suffocating defense. It was aggressive at the point of attack, and then it was kind of none of that. It was against Texas A&M. You know, that was, you don't like to talk about moral victories, but that felt like a moral victory that they somehow turned into two more losses. Because Mike Rhodes mentioned that yesterday, and said that they let one turn into another, right? They let it get rolling and lose multiple games. But I think it is there remains questions about how his defense will hold up in the Big Ten. I don't know that this weekend helped those questions. I do think they have a lot of talent. I think Ace Baldwin is really, really good. Not having Kanye Clary for most of the VCU game obviously hurt, but, you know, it's tough. This is a whole new team. They look like they were gelling through four games, and now through seven, you wonder if there's still a lot of strides to be made in that regard. And so I think this is, you know, this season probably ends at the end of the day where a lot of people expected it to, maybe from the outside. I thought there was a chance that they could make the NIT. I still think there's a chance they can make the NIT. I don't know if that's as certain maybe as I was a week ago. But I think ultimately it's a team that's probably going to finish in the bottom third of the Big Ten, as I think most would expect, and should be trying to get to that 11-12 range with a decent shot of being, you know, 13th and showing those building blocks, though, showing reason to believe in next year. But I think really it just comes down to how good is this defense going to look against Big Ten teams consistently, because if it's not going at full speed, it's not running on all cylinders, right? And they can't get the turnovers they need, and they're giving up too many open threes because they're pressing so much. Then I think you start to question, you know, maybe Mike Rhodes has to change up his defensive scheme a little bit. But until we see a bigger sample size of that, I think it's probably, you know, as jarring as 4-3 is after a 4-0 start for fans, I think it's staying the course for now and waiting until you see more consistently against Big Ten teams exactly how this is going to look.
Yeah, and we'll get a read on that next week when they have Maryland and Ohio State back-to-back. All right.
That's right.
Yep. John, always a pleasure. Always enjoy the conversation and your insights.
Thank you so much, Steve. Always appreciate it.
John Sauber, Center Daily Times. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, Jerry Dulac in the next half hour. We'll talk about how the Steelers were able to get 400 yards and couldn't break 20 points. Hey, really? Think about it. They got 400 yards. Everybody's having a parade for them. Like, then you look at how many points they scored. You look at them like, really? Iowa almost outscored them. How did that happen? I mean, I wouldn't be jumping up and down. Greg, can you explain it?
I cannot explain it. I watched that game. I still can't explain it. They did. They ran up and down the field. They just couldn't score points. It was unbelievable.
Well, getting Pat Freiermuth back has helped Kenny Pickett.
That did help. He had a great game.
Yeah, he had nine catches for over 100 yards.
Yep. He had a great game.
You know, and he's also the kind of guy that when you get into the red zone, he is outstanding in the red zone. And if the ball is fumbled, he actually will go after it. All right, so,
right.
It's just me. I mean, mercy me.
You see a lot of that in the NFL, though, Steve.
Not to that extent,
Greg. I agree. But you see a lot of guys that aren't hustling on plays. I mean, you see in college level also, but it's sad to see something like that.
So, Jerry, in the next half hour, great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.